Welcome to Home and Family Finance with Paul Barry. It's your family, it's your finances, and it's your future. Home and Family Finance is sponsored by the Defense Credit Union Council, serving those who serve our country, and by CUNA, the Credit Union National Association. Now, here's the host of Home and Family Finance, Paul Barry.
As always, a pleasure to be with you here on Home and Family Finance. Thanks so much for joining us on the Radio America Network. You know it is Financial Literacy Month. We told you that last week, and we hope that you're taking advantage of learning some things that you may not know that can make you more literate when it comes to your home, your family, and your finances. One of my guests today will be coming in from PwC, and we're talking about Americans say financial literacy should be taught in schools. No kidding. Well, we know that, and of course, that's part of what we're talking about here on this program. And the other is something that caught my eye the other day. It came across my desk, and it said this program would have consumers get paid and receive rewards when shopping for the right, more healthy choices in their supermarket. No kidding. So we decided to look into this, and we have two wonderful people who join us who are part of the program or working with it. This unique program is launching, showing consumers how, according to them, their waistline can affect their bottom line. Shoppers can save money by buying nutritious food at the grocery store. And here to explain the connection between long-term health and financial well-being is Brooks Tingle. He's Senior Vice President of Marketing and Strategy for John Hancock Insurance. He's joined by Dr. Christina Economos, Associate Professor from the Friedman School of Nutrition, Science, and Policy at Tufts University. That's in Boston. There to discuss the role of nutrition in a healthy lifestyle. What a pleasure to have you, Brooks. And Christina, thanks so much for joining us here on Home and Family Finance.
Thank you.
Yes, this program. Brooks, tell us what the program is all about. How does this work?
Well, Paul, thanks again for sharing time with us today. We're excited about it because we think it's a really interesting intersection of insurance protection and family finance and healthy living. And, you know, as a life insurer, it occurred to us a while back that in the range of people that should care about people living long, healthy lives, I mean, your family and your friends certainly want you to live a long, healthy life. We each aspire to that, but shouldn't your life insurance company really care about that too? And rather than just providing insurance protection and hoping that customers live a long, healthy life, we've decided to really play an active role with our customers and really encourage them and support them and indeed reward them for taking steps to live a longer, healthier life. So, you know, for a year now, we've been offering savings and discounts and other rewards for people that undertake even small steps to be more healthy, whether it's going out for a walk or a run and things like that, seeing your doctor as you're supposed to. But now, you know, because nutritional choices play such an important role in how long we live and how well we live, we're bringing this feature to customers where they can save up to 25% on healthy food purchases.
And Brooks, that's what caught my eye. Let me just say, the program rewards consumers with savings of up to $600 a year or about $50 a month on their grocery bills for buying nutritious, healthy foods. Christina, how does that work? That's an important step. How do you do that?
Well, we know that a healthy, nutritious diet can really prevent against the development of chronic diseases. And so what we're encouraging people to purchase at the store are things like lean sources of protein, fruits and vegetables, whole grains, low-fat dairy products, and to really think twice about being enticed by inexpensive foods like chips and soda, which really might seem like a good investment at the time, but it doesn't take into account the long-term costs on their health.
Yeah, but Christina, that tastes good. They taste delicious. I mean, I've got to have my potato chips. Come on now. Are you taking all those goodies away?
Absolutely not. What we're asking people to do is really look at their total diet and the majority of time to make healthy purchases and consume healthy foods. It doesn't mean that sometimes there isn't room for treats.
And, Paul, you'll be excited to know that our program doesn't penalize you for buying the bad food. We just reward you for buying the good food.
Now, when you say reward, do you physically make it? I mean, how does the reward? I guess that's what I'm asking. Is it because I'm saving, or do I get something from you for doing this? How does this work?
Sure. There are a couple levels. The first is the actual savings on the healthy food purchase. Up to, again, a 25% discount on the healthy food purchases themselves. The second component is that this vitality program I told you about Perhaps think about it a bit like an airline frequent flyer program as it relates to life insurance, and you get points for doing healthy things. Taking a certain number of steps a day, you get points for. Seeing your doctor, you get points for. And now, buying nutritious foods at the grocery store, you will get points for. And those points accumulate and determine a status level, and that status level drives not just discounts on the food and other things, hotels, all sorts of other retailers, but also discounts on your life insurance premium itself, up to 15% a year. So the savings are leveraged really in a number of different ways.
That's wonderful. And I see you have more than 16,000 grocery stores across the nation who are participating. So the store that I shop in has to be has to participate in the program in order for me to take advantage of the savings.
It does. We've tried to start with as broad of a network as possible with those 16,000 stores representing over 70 of the leading chains, but we'll be looking to expand that all the time. So if you visit our website, jhrewardslife.com, you'll see a link to see which stores are participating. If you don't see yours in the short term, you can count on the fact that we're trying to make that network ever broader.
And Christina, I guess what the real message here is that if you eat properly, and not only can you save obviously your $50, but if you're eating properly, you also can save your life.
Absolutely. You know, in the United States, poor diet is estimated to be the cause of 1 in 4 deaths. And we can really prevent dying early by eating healthy. And this program that we're talking about incentivizes consumers to make healthy choices on a daily basis.
So how did you determine which habits deserved a special reward, Brooks? How did you do that?
Yeah, well, the neat thing about the time period we live in is that there are some pretty clear choices we all make each day. That, you know, none of us can control how long we'll live, but we can certainly influence it. How much exercise do we get? Do we smoke or not? Do we see our doctors when we're supposed to? And as we're talking about today, the quality of nutritional choices we make. So that's really the heart of the program. But, you know, nutritional choices aren't always easy.
They're not. And I understand. When I come back, we'll talk about it. Brooks Tingle, Senior Vice President John Hancock, and Christina Economist, Associate Professor at Tufts. We're talking about ways you can save money and save your life. What a great idea. We'll be right back. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry, on the Radio America Network.
We want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about. Or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry.
The program we're talking about rewards consumers with savings of up to $600 a year at your favorite grocery store. You got to make sure the store is participating. But if you do this the right way, according to a Christina Economist, you're going to not only save money, Chris, but you're going to save. You're going to be a healthier eater at the end of the day, right?
That's right. That's right. You know, we really want people to think about the choices they're making, and pairing choice making with incentives is a great way to steer people toward healthier foods. And people can start small. These changes can be gradual. So choosing water over a sugary beverage or choosing fruits and vegetables over a snack food, those are things someone can do on a daily basis that will go a long way over the course of years and years to preventing chronic disease and improving their overall health.
Brooks, go ahead.
I was just going to add to Christina's comment that some of the choices are obvious, you know, fruits and vegetables versus chips and soda, but oftentimes there are subtleties here that make it quite confusing, I think, to many of us as shoppers when we're in the grocery store in terms of what's truly healthy or not. So, and through our collaboration with the Friedman School of Nutrition, Science, and Policy at Tufts, we've come up with some really neat tools to help customers make those choices. The program has an app that if you're in the grocery store at one of these participating stores, you can scan the barcode of an item on the shelf with your smartphone, and it'll pop up information about that particular item. And items are scored, and it really helps you make choices, one food versus another, because, again, in the extreme, choices are clear, but oftentimes there are subtleties that aren't so clear.
How do I know, guys, which grocery stores are participating? Is there some kind of sign or symbol or what?
If you go to jhrewardslife.com, there'll be a link to take you to the network of over the 70 stores that participate. Some are major. As you probably know, in the grocery business, there sort of tend to be a lot of regional chains. We do have included in that national outlets like Walmart, for example. And if you're in a Walmart in the food section, you'll see a sign called Great For You right on the label on the shelf. Any item that says Great For You qualifies. In the other stores, it's where you use the app to see whether the particular food qualifies or not. But
Chris,
in terms of the stores themselves,
yeah.
jhrewardslife.com will lead you to a list of all those stores.
Christina, this is really taking advantage of this new technology. What you've done here is to say, look, we've got the capability. Let's put it to good use in terms of saving people's lives. Is that a good assessment?
That's absolutely true. I mean, imagine going to the store, using an app, and filling your cart with a whole variety of healthy foods and saving money at the same time.
Isn't that wonderful that we can do that?
It's a pattern.
Yeah, we can do that today. But people just have to know that it can work for them and believe that it can work, right?
That's right. And there are lots of foods out there that are healthy. So trying different things, deciding what's right for you and your family, and then continuing to purchase those over time is really the way to go.
I think it's wonderful, the collaboration. I mean, who would think that a nutritionist at Tufts and then John Hancock, a longtime person who's worked there, would come together for this kind of marketing and strategy? This is beautiful. And where do you see this going, Brooke?
Well, the great thing is, again, about the age we live in is science is constantly evolving, whether it be around nutrition or other factors that cause us to live longer, healthier lives. And you can count on our program, just as we're enhancing it this year with this very strong nutritional, healthy food benefit, you can count on us continuing to, as technology advances, as the science advances, to being absolutely certain we're rewarding our customers and supporting our customers to make those choices to live a long, healthy life.
My guest, Christina Economos, co-founder and director of Child Obesity, 180 at Tufts, and Brooks E. Tingle, rather, senior vice president, marketing and strategy. When we come back, we'll tell you how to make sure you make the connect. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry. Listening to Home and Family Finance on the Radio America Network. I'm your host, Paul Berry, and we thank you for joining us. Our program sponsors are the Defense Credit Union Council and Acuna. We thank them for their continued support of the program dedicated to making all of us financially fit. The Defense Credit Union Council and its member credit unions believe that financial readiness equals mission readiness and supports the efforts of Military Saves in their dedication to improving the financial well-being of our troops. Military Saves is a year-round campaign that seeks to motivate, support, and encourage military families to save money, to reduce debt, and to build wealth. As part of the Department of Defense's financial readiness campaign, Military Saves acts as a resource center for information on financial education and counseling. Check out its links to useful websites for military families where they can learn better money management and can find partners who can help military members achieve their financial goals. Military Saves. Set a goal, make a plan, save automatically. Go to militarysaves.org for more information and take the Savers Pledge today. And as we always say, you don't have to be in the military to save. Everybody should be saving. And in a program that we're describing to you right now, thanks to my guests who are here, both the Brooks Tingle, Senior Vice President of Marketing and Strategy for John Hancock Insurance, and Christina Economos, Associate Professor from the Friedman School of Nutrition Science and Policy at Tufts University, you could save $500 to $600 a year by shopping at the right place, buying the right food. I love this concept. Christina, tell us, how do we hook up and become partners with you guys?
Well, as Brooke said, visiting the website jhrewardslife.com for more information is a great way to find out how to take advantage of this. And my recommendation is that people really start with small, achievable changes. They can go so far to a healthy lifestyle, and this program rewards people for starting where they are and moving forward from there.
Okay, Brooks, take me through it. I go to my grocery store, and I look for what, and then I do what?
Well, I think the first thing is to visit jhrewardslife.com and look at the overall solution, which is the marriage of life insurance protection with these healthy food benefits. And it's interesting because if you look at surveys, most Americans say, geez, I probably need more life insurance protection. And most Americans say, geez, I should probably be a little more healthy. So we try to bring those two together. And if you need life insurance, which most of us need a little more than we have, and you're looking to be rewarded in this way, you know, look into this coverage on jhrewardslife.com. Once you're in the program, the website will very carefully walk you through how to enroll and which grocery stores to go to, and how you actually receive the discount right at the point of sale in some cases. And it up with other stores, it's sort of a cash back mechanism.
Mm-hmm. And Christina, who's paying for this? Who's paying for this program, Tufts or John Hancock or both?
This is Brooks. I can kind of jump in on that, because at the end of the day, the great thing about this is that, you know, we're saying to customers, we make money if you live a longer, healthier life. That's pretty obvious as a life insurance company. If our customers live longer, we make more money. And we're saying, because of that fact, we're going to help you do it, and the money that we save, we're going to share a substantial amount of that back with you in this exact type of form, mm-hmm. to encourage you, motivate you, and keep you going and making those healthy choices. So it's really sort of a shared value proposition between the insurance company and our customers.
So a little something in there for everyone, and the bottom line is that we eat healthier. Do you see us going in that direction as a nation, Christina? What's happening? Are we eating healthier or are we not?
Absolutely. There are so many different sectors of society that are working on this, from the food industry to business to nutrition scientists. And we know changing the environment around us and policies that control our lives can really have an impact on what people put on their plates. So this program really pairs the financial incentives with the nutrition research and shows people how to do just that, how to eat healthier, prevent chronic disease, live a healthier life, and make money back.
I tell you, it's a wonderful program. And when I saw this, guys, I was very impressed. I like the collaboration between the two. You know, we can do different things in our life, but the bottom line is we can join hands together to make sure that we're eating healthy and that we're living longer.
Absolutely.
Well, you've certainly done this, and I appreciate you taking time to be with us here on the program. Again, you can give us that email address again, Brooks, and nice and slow so people can pick it up.
Sure, Paul. It's jhrewardslife.com.
jhrewardslife.com. I'm very pleased. You know, one of the reasons, guys, I like doing this program is that I'm able to share this kind of information with our audience, again, using the technology to make life better and to make us safer in so many ways. Thank you both for being with me, and thanks for doing this program, and come back and see us again, would you please?
Great. Will do. Thank you, Paul.
Okay. What a pleasure. And thank you, Christina. It's a pleasure to have you on the program. Keep up the good work over at Tufts. Folks, this program is designed for you. Simple as that. And it works. Check the website out. Go to your supermarket. Find out what you need to know and get on with the business of living a healthy life. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry, here on the Radio America Network. Nice to be with you again this week. Thanks for joining us. Coming up next, what we all need to know and what we all need to learn when it comes to being financially literate.
Safe, smart, and secure with your finances. Welcome back to Home and Family Finance with your host, Paul Berry.
You know, I feel very special to have the occasion to share with you again and all of this month that April is Financial Literacy Month. And if you know anything about our show at all, you know that's why we're on the air. Our whole basis is about financial literacy, how to make us more responsible, educated consumers. Who understand the importance of being financially literate. That simply means that we know a thing or two here when it comes to our money. You know, here's a good example of what financial literacy is. It is the ability to understand how money works in the world, how someone manages, meaning you, to earn or make the money, how you manage it, how you turn it into more money, and how you donate it to help others. That is a good example of financial literacy. And no one knows that any better than my next guest who's joining us from New York, based in Chicago. And Shannon Schuyler, who is a president and principal with PricewaterhouseCoopers, has been on this program before. And the reason she's on the program, and she will continue to be on the program, is that she represents what PwC is doing from the standpoint of being corporate responsible. This company, let me just give you this. In 2012, PwC launched Earn Your Future, EYF. It's a five-year, $160 million commitment focused on helping students develop critical financial skills and providing educators with the resources and training to teach those skills in schools. Now, that's a very important combination. Who teaches financial literacy? The one thing that PwC realized is that teachers, you're not going to learn if teachers don't know how to teach. And we certainly don't. Do you know how to teach your kids to be financially literate? I'll bet you a dollar to a donut you don't. I don't. And I'm in this business. So this is a wonderful program. In April 2015, PwC extended EYF, Earn Your Future, by an additional $30 million, increasing its overall commitment to $190 million, folks. EYF is now one of the largest and broadest corporate commitments to financial literacy within the U.S. Now, in our conversations, I would say to Shannon, what are our other companies we're doing? And being the professional that she is, she's not going to be lured into criticizing anybody. But I got to tell you, because they set the example, I recently just received this information. This comes from another company, RBC Wealth Management and City National Bank. Guess what they've done? They've done a poll, and it says, and a poll they sent it to me, 87%. It is financial literacy an important enough skill that it should be taught alongside reading, writing, and arithmetic? Most Americans seem to think so, according to a recent survey from RBC Wealth Management, U.S. and City National Banks. They get it. Here's another corporation that says, wait a minute, we're not going to let PwC be out there by itself. But as far as I'm concerned, PwC is first in what they've done, and Shannon Schuyler is first in my life in terms of being on this show. Welcome to Home and Family Finance, Shannon.
Oh, it's always wonderful to be with you.
How was that set up for you, huh?
I know. It couldn't have been better. Thank you for that.
Absolutely. No, I thank you for what you look. You lead the way. You shine the light. You say this is worth something. There is reward in doing what we're doing. We're not just putting $190 million out there because we want to look good. We're putting $190 million out there because it can make a positive difference in the lives of young Americans. I know this new study that you have that we're going to talk about, which was very exciting, called Bridging the Financial Literacy Gap, Empowering Teachers to Support the Next Generation. And I think that's the one thing we both have come to realize, that if we're going to make a difference, it's going to be because teachers know how to teach financial literacy. Is that a fair statement?
No, absolutely. And what we found out through this survey is that now millennial teachers, and so teachers now that are just starting their careers, they really see the value of teaching financial literacy in elementary school even far more than their colleagues who have been teaching for many generations. And so it's great to see this young, vibrant group of teachers saying yes, because we certainly know that we as millennials need help with financial understanding and capability. And so teaching students as young as we can within our classrooms is just key to making sure that there's more success and people have more understanding about the financial markets and how to really be able to save and to have a lifestyle that they want to live.
And let me right now suggest to the teachers out there nationwide, worldwide, we're not maligning teachers one bit. We know that teachers are doing everything they possibly can to make sure that their students are financially literate. But the truth of the matter is, many of us never had to learn, or many of us did not learn to be good financial money managers in our lifetime. And so we didn't quite know the best way. And if you don't believe that's true, just check. Try to find out how many kids out there can even balance a checkbook. Now, maybe it wasn't that the teachers couldn't teach, but the emphasis was not on financial literacy. Is that a fair statement?
No, absolutely. And I think what we're finding out now is that when you think about it, you learn, as you were talking about before, math and reading and history, and teachers teach it in classrooms, and then students go home, and whether or not their parents know exactly what they've been taught, they don't contradict it. They don't see something different happening with their parents. But when you think about financial understanding, what's happening is as teachers teach it in a classroom and talk about budgeting and talking about balancing your checkbook, then they go home and they see their parents doing the opposite. That's what we're starting to realize is one of the issues why financial training within schools is harder to actually see a difference in, because students are put in a very interesting position where they're learning one thing in the classroom about all the ways that they should save and all the ways that they should make sure that they have money at times of need. But when they go home, they're not necessarily see that play out with their parents. And so because it's so different, it starts to negate what they've actually learned within the classroom, which is why this study was fascinating that said, we really need to figure out how do we send more tools home with students to reach out to the parents to make sure that what is being taught is being reinforced.
Wow, that's very interesting. That, you know, so my guest, of course, is Shannon Scotter from PwC. We're talking about this new study. And now the reinforcement that young people need when they learn what they learn in school. And now we're reaching beyond the school to the home. This is wonderful. When we come back, we'll ask her, what is the state of financial education in the U.S. today and how this new idea will work and can it work? You're listening to Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry, here on the Radio America Network.
We want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about. Or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry.
And we're all about financial literacy, and so is PricewaterhouseCoopers, and we're very pleased to have their representative here, Shannon Schuyler, who's a principal and one of the presidents there of a program that is designed, $190 million program that is designed to do one thing, and that's up the educational level of our young people and the teachers. And now, Shannon, I find this very interesting, and you're saying, hey, how can we make sure that that students who are learning get this, what they're learning reinforced at home. How do you propose to do that?
Learn how to bring the parents in. And so one of the things that we've done with our curriculum is we've had a lot of camps for teachers. And those teacher camps have led to parent camps and for parents to be able to come because they want to learn as they have their students and their children are coming home and telling them what they've learned in class and about different types of things for financial well-being. And so they've asked us to help. And so we've done many things after school programs as well as weekend programs and even as a part of our summer camps that we do, having both parents there as well as teachers to learn for themselves and to also then figure out how to best teach and to show good behaviors to their children and their students.
You know, Shannon, in the 8 years that I have been doing this program, which has always been the same, not political, financially based, I have been told by so many people that the problem, our educational level, our financial education level is just too big to fix. That's not something that PricewaterhouseCoopers believes, is it?
No, I mean, we really believe that education is something that's a combination of certainly you have government involvement, you have nonprofits, but you have to have corporations as well. And more companies like ours are stepping up to say, how can we help fill those gaps? We have resources in the hundreds of thousands of people that we can bring to the table. We have dollars. We have skills and knowledge that we can pass on. And really trying to figure out how can we be a part of this is exciting. And I think one of the things now that we're really seeing as well with the younger teachers is they do a lot with really finding grant money. And so in the past, sometimes it was hard to be able to get dollars into the hands of teachers because they didn't know exactly how to use all the online platforms. Now we're seeing millennial teachers reach out and ask for grants. And now in incredibly growing rates, ask for grants to teach financial literacy. So I really feel like we're at a place now of a tipping point that this is going to be seen as something that's incredibly valuable to be able to teach in schools.
Wouldn't that be wonderful if, in fact, you're right that we are there, is that we can turn that corner? Because once we turn the corner, that is to say, once we are really teaching financial literacy the way it should be taught, that means all future generations are going to come out of school with at least a working knowledge of how to protect their money, how to make the right decisions, and how to be financially fit in their lives.
Absolutely. And I think the one thing that is probably the hardest for me to understand is when you think about the barriers of teaching, the one barrier that really got to me in this study was teachers said that there's still a belief that financial education isn't seen as critical for career or college readiness, which is why their schools are not teaching it. And to me, I look at just the crushing student debt. I look at making decisions about jobs and where you're going to live. And all of that comes down to how do you have an understanding of how financially you're going to be able to do all those things. And so some way, somehow, we have to get into the minds of more people in schools that this is a life skill. This is a career and job readiness skill because just think of all the better decisions that you can make as you build on those good behaviors.
And you've heard me say, and this points right back to what I call educational roulette. We teach our kids a little bit of everything because we don't really know what they're going to be when they grow up, when they get out there. But what's the one thing that we know they're going to be? They're going to be consumers. We know that they're going to be consumers. And yet we let them get out of school without understanding, you know, how to balance checkbook. It makes no sense. But the one thing we can teach them to be is what we know they're going to be. They're going to be consumers no matter what whatever path they choose, right?
No, absolutely. And that's why it's so alarming when you see the wealth gap increase. A lot of it is due to just not having an appreciation of everything you have to look at. And so it's not just about getting to college and graduating and getting a job. It's having to put all those pieces together of saying, well, what kind of loans? What are you going to do to get into college? How does that actually equate to where you want to live and the career choice that you made? And the decisions about the types of experiences that you want to have. You have to look at all these things together. And as you and I have talked, this isn't just about dollars, right? It's not just about knowing how to manage a dollar. It's about looking at the behaviors that actually guide your decisions to make sure that you're looking in the future. And I think we have to really focus on that, because one of the things we do know is the millennials, with all the incredible things that they bring to us, they want an experience, and they want the experience now. And we have to figure out how to lengthen that experience and really help them to save for the future.
Yeah, there's no question about that. What I also loved about your study is that you asked the tough questions. For instance, how comfortable would you be teaching financial education, you're asking of these of teachers, if your school or district asked? 18% not at all comfortable, 31% completely comfortable. And what I liked is 51% moderately comfortable. What I mean is, it seems like you were saying the tipping point. We seem to be trending toward a position where teachers, a majority of teachers, are going to be comfortable saying, yeah, I can teach financial education. I can teach you how to be financially fit. And once we get to that point, then we really are turning a corner.
Absolutely. Then it's something that gets baked into not just one class that's focused on business or financial capability, but then this should be a topic that comes up when you're talking in history about the Great Depression. That's a teaching point. That's a learning moment around financial capability and the things that can happen. And the more teachers that have an appreciation and that feel comfortable in teaching it, the more opportunities to really weave it through all types of curriculum.
And not only that, the other part of this, which is phenomenal, because it does weave. Money weaves through everything. Finances, it touches everything. But also, we ought to get started much earlier, too. I mean, I don't think kids are – you can teach kids very young to at least have some sense of what's going on with their dollars.
No, absolutely. I have a 3.5-year-old, and we have conversations even around Easter, whether he wanted one jelly bean today or if he wanted to wait till tomorrow and have two jelly beans. And he gets that. He already gets what that means. And so it's about behaviors and choices, and we have to instill those. And really, the younger you can do that, the better off and the more understanding people really have going forward what dealing with their money will be.
Shannon Schuyler, my guest from PwC. When we come back, we'll talk about what you need to do from your perspective, that is to say, your kids, or even you, in terms of learning. More on from the study and more about the business of being financially literate in the Financial Literacy Month of April. You're listening to Home and Family Finance. I'm Paul Berry. It's Financial Literacy Month, and you're listening to Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry, here on the Radio America Network. My guest is Shannon Schuyler, who was one of the principals and presidents at PricewaterhouseCoopers, a worldwide firm that is doing what I think any responsible corporate entity would do, and that is to say, wait a minute, you know what? We're bringing people up, hiring them, and how much easier it would be and how much better our lives would be. And how much further can we go if the people that we bring in here already have the basic financial skills that they should have to make decisions not only about their personal lives, but about the role that they play in terms of what our core company does? That's got to be in the back of the minds of PwC as well, right?
No, absolutely. And we really are focused on making sure that the marketplace in general, I mean, all boats rise when people are spending appropriately, when they're saving appropriately, when they're making very wise decisions. And we really just feel like we want to make sure that our society overall can continue to progress in a successful way, but also that we find a way to start reducing that wealth gap. And part of that is educating people around their finances and how to make sure they don't get behind, which is so critical if you actually want to be able to move forward.
I know you do these studies, and I know the reason you do those studies is really to kind of get a placemat as to where we are at any given time. What struck you most about this, what you learned in this study, Shannon?
In comparison to other studies, there wasn't so much that was new overall. I think the barriers and a couple of those were different, but what struck me the most was just really the sentiment, as I started with the millennial teachers. And, you know, 62% of them really believe that teaching financial literacy should start in elementary school, and that's comparison of 51% of their older colleagues who don't necessarily believe that. Mm-hmm. And I think that having this group who went through a very significant downturn in the economy and actually saw the behaviors that their parents had and that other family members had really do understand that this is really behaviorally driven and are pushing more and more and asking their principals, asking their superintendents to see if they can get more training. And so they're out there now really advocating for both curriculum, both being able to go to additional outside courses to be taught, and they're becoming advocates for this in a way that we hadn't imagined. And it's a little counterintuitive because we know that the millennial generation so far has proven not to be very sound in a financial way. They tend to spend more. They're not taking advantage of things like their 401ks. They're doing a lot more riskier behavior using payday loans, et cetera. But mm-hmm. we're finding that the teachers really understand it. And I think that's so pivotal to have that in classrooms and to have students exposed to that.
That is so refreshing. It is so refreshing, especially when you're out here saying, we've got to do something about this. And then all of a sudden you're starting to see a group of young people say, I get that. And yeah, you're absolutely right. Let's do what we can. The other part that's refreshing to me, and I don't know how widespread it is, and maybe you do. I know you're never going to criticize your corporate members and family, but I would hope that more and more corporations are doing what you're doing. Are you seeing a more willingness on the part of the corporate families to say, look, let's jump in here and do more?
We are. I mean, I think definitely corporations are seeing the benefits that they can provide both within the educational system and within schools, as well as things like the student loan payment program. And so we launched ours, and now other companies have launched theirs, trying to help people who come to our organizations pay off their student debt. Certainly one of the things that we hear a lot of is the debt is so crushing that when people start their careers, they just can't get ahead of those payments for about $35,000 on average they owe from going to college. And so really having companies step up, and PwC, we pay up to $10,000 of that loan off just as part of a benefit. And we think the more companies do that, the more you're able to really start people on a much brighter foot. Because that debt, which prior generations didn't have the same level of, is one of the reasons why people have gotten into worse financial shape now than before. And so I think more companies need to continue to step up to say, we can be a part of this solution.
My phone is already ringing off the hook here. People want to know, okay, you guys are paying 10 grand. Hey, that's where I want to be. How do they reach out to PwC if they're interested in employment?
Oh, absolutely. They can go to our website, www.pwc.com, go to our careers section, and you can see a plethora of different opportunities that are out there. And then for those on college campuses, we also have a huge section on there that specifically is for college students.
See, so I wish I could start again. If I could start again, I would be right there, but I guess I'm over the hill that way. Anyway, listen, what a pleasure. Always nice to have you on the show. Thank you for taking time to be with us and to explain what you guys are doing, and thank you for doing what you do and continue.
Thank you. Pleasure.
Absolutely. Shannon Scott are my guest here on Home and Family Finance. I hope you've learned something, folks. I hope we've inspired you to be better financial members of society. Do the right thing. Learn what you need to do and manage your money. I'll be back next week, same time, same place. Hope you'll be here. Radio America Network, Home and Family Finance. Have a good day.